Radio Corporation of America presents the first performance of The Magic Key. Ladies and gentlemen, today the RCA Magic Key turns for the first time in a radio presentation, bringing to you from many corners of the world such well-known friends as Maria Yerica, singing from Vienna and accompanied by the Vienna Symphony Orchestra, Dr. Walter Damrosch from New York, Amos and Andy, a split-second trip around the world by radio, Paul Whiteman, John B. Kennedy, and from Hollywood, Walt Disney with Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. And now, Frank Black from Radio City, leading the NBC Symphony Orchestra in the prelude to the third act of Lohengrin. Westbound, 975 miles away, the steamship Majestic is bringing David Sarnoff, the president of the Radio Corporation of America, to New York. It was hoped that he would be here in person. But with the magic key of radio, everybody can be everywhere in person. So, Mr. Sarnoff, will you turn the magic key that will open our program from mid-ocean?
Good afternoon, America. As I stand before this microphone on this great ship, hundreds of miles away from land, knowing that my voice is reaching across the water and to the farthest corners of our country, I think back to that momentous day, 34 years ago, when my friend Guglielmo Marconi carried the faint signals of the first transatlantic wireless message. In those 24 short years, radio has transformed the life of the world. Today, a wireless message trickles the globe in a few seconds. A businessman in New York talks to another businessman in Australia as if he were in the same room. The sound of a muted violin in London is heard in the homes of San Francisco. Thousands of lives impelled by storms at sea are saved by the tap of a magic key. These are the achievements of radio, which we of the RCA regard with pride and view with confidence. They express the pleasure we feel in the efforts of our organization to help you enjoy the services and secure the benefits which radio offers to all alike. For the Radio Corporation and the Radio Arts are part of each other and have grown together. Both are still young and full of promise for the future. But the progress already made by this American enterprise can best be measured by its speed and by its service. The RCA family now comprises 21,000 employees and 278,000 stockholders. Hundreds of thousands of other people contribute in one way or another to the manufacture of RCA Victor radio and phonograph equipment, to the radio programs of our national broadcasting company, to the domestic and foreign radio telegraph services of RCA Communications and Radio Marine, and to RCA's part in the motion picture and theater industry. To all these, and to the millions of radio listeners we seek to serve, I send my hearty greetings from this fine ship on the Atlantic Ocean. You are cordially invited to be the guests of the RCA every Sunday afternoon when the magic key of radio will open the doors to new and varied wonders.
Thank you, Mr. Sarnoff, for opening our program from Mid-Atlantic. Closely woven into the history of radio broadcasting is Frank Black, the general musical director of the National Broadcasting Company. He has distinguished himself as a conductor and arranger of radio programs, as well as supervising the music of the entire network. Frank Black conducts the NBC Symphony Orchestra in Holiday from the Tall City Suite composed by Hans Spielek on the occasion of the opening of Radio City 2 years ago. Thank you. out across the Atlantic, deep in the heart of Europe, is the music mecca of the world, Vienna. In a broadcasting studio there, waiting for the magic key to turn again, is one of the brilliant sopranos of our time. The great concert halls and opera palaces of America and the continent have rung with applause at the sound of her unforgettable voice. The magic key turns to bring us Maria Yaritsa, former star of the Metropolitan Opera and Victor recording artist, now on tour in Europe. Madame Yaritsa, accompanied by the Vienna Symphony Orchestra.
I send greetings and best wishes to my friends in America. It is a rare and welcome privilege to sing in Vienna to my dear audiences over the ocean from New York to Beverly Hills in California. My program will consist of two numbers in Italian, one Austrian, and one in the language of America. It is wonderful indeed that the music of the old masters and the operas can be heard throughout the world over the radio. From the old and historic capital city of Austria, which I love so dearly and which has given so much to the whole art and glory of music, I sing today with a happy heart, and I hope you will enjoy the program.
Now you will hear Madame Yaritsa, supported by the Vienna Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Wolfgang Kubasa. The song I Love You Truly by Carrie Jacobs Bond.
Thank you.
Questo è il vostro, per translata, per opera di Paganini.
So many features to bring you, we regret that we cannot stay longer in Vienna. So thank you, Madame Gierisse, and thank you, RCA Communications, for bringing Vienna closely to us so quickly. His first appearance was on Broadway, and he's still on Broadway. Yes, it's true that it's another Broadway. But some years ago, a little boy in a blue serge suit played a fiddle in a Sunday school orchestra on Broadway at 16th Street in Denver, Colorado. His father led the choir. Known to us now through his Victor Records and national radio broadcast as the king of jazz, our Paul Whiteman.
And I'm especially happy to be here today. And I didn't know that anybody remembered that I started in Sunday school. And I can't tell you how much radio has meant to me and my band. Our very first program went over the National Broadcasting Company. We'd like to celebrate our ninth year on the air by playing a tune from the new picture we're in, which is called Thanks a Million. The tune is The Belle of New Orleans, and it will feature Ramona, the King's Men, and Bob Lawrence. ¶¶
Hail to the queen, hail to the crown.
Streets are laden with folks parading and serenading in pairs.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares about one lonely girl. In New Orleans, she was queen of the Mardi Gras.
But now she's cast off the crown of
And to think she used to be the belle of New Orleans.
And to think she used to be the belle of New Orleans.
I'm sitting by my front window, smiling, but I want to cry. Nobody pays me any heed. I'm watching a parade that I used to lead. And that's the way the world goes by. I'm a lady who is lonely and neglected. And to think I used to be the belle of New Orleans. About this time of year I always feel dejected. And to think I used to be the belle of New Orleans. Men would surround me and pound me. They found me just like a queen on a throne. They wined me and dined me, but now they can't find me. That's why I'm here, all alone. When you're just a bit passe, why, that's expected. Then you thought to rule, go out in search of other queens. I'm a lady who is lonely and neglected. And to think I used to be the belle of New Orleans.
Thank you, Paul Whiteman. We're glad that RCA turned the magic key of recording and perpetuated your work on Victor Records. We'll hear more from you later. But now the magic key takes us away straight out to Detroit, where, through the person of John B. Kennedy, the brilliant editor, writer, and news commentator, we're going to get a real first-hand observer's glimpse of stories you've been reading about all week. Ladies and gentlemen, we take you to Detroit.
Good afternoon, all. Prosperity seems on its way back with a bang. Even on Sunday, smokestacks write in the crisp blue fall sky their story of Detroit's revival, reflecting recovery everywhere. Detroit was founded because the French King Louis XII liked beaver hats. He sent his 17th century voyageur to get the best beavers in the River Rouge here. Today I looked over the home of another Louis, or Louis, the dark lightning called Joe Louis. It was in a district that looked like Addis Ababa in its Sunday clothes. 6,000 Detroiters went to Manhattan to see the Bear Lewis fight. Most of them had seats somewhere in the suburbs. A friend of mine actually took an RCA Victor portable set to his seat to hear the fight. The first $1 million gate since Dempsey Tunney days, not counting the amusement tax. Although amusement tax is really a bit of a misnomer regarding prize fights. It might be called a torture tax. Torture for the contestants when they try to disassemble each other. Torture for the customers when they don't. That $1 million gate and its carnival of spending was concrete evidence of return prosperity. Here's more of the same thing. Detroit and Chicago are got with World Series enthusiasm. Frank Navin, owner of the Tigers, says he has more than 500,000 written requests from all parts of the country for tickets. Five times the demand for tickets to last year's series. And the tickets sell at $5 and $6 a copy. The hotels here and in Chicago will need rubber roofs to take care of the rush. Sport is a key to the spirit of a country. When sport rides high with bumper crops of fans, that means things are moving. Mickey Cochran, the Tiger leader, tells me the World Series will be a pitcher's battle. Charlie Grimm, the Chicago Cubs commander, tells me the same thing from St. Louis. Mickey will start with genial, jolting schoolboy Rowe, while Grimm will use Lum Warnke as shock trooper number one. It's a battle of youth. Both clubs average at or below the mid-20s. I just contacted Babe Ruth in New York for a forecast, but the smart Babe speak no English for the present. Mickey Cochran went down to St. Louis to scout the Cubs. He wanted to see one game unbeknownst, so he pulled down his hat brim, turned up his coat collar, slipped through side streets, back alleys, and Chinese laundries. But just as Mickey popped up at the ballpark, the first fan to see him said, "How are you, Mr. Cochran?" Charlie Grimm of the Cubs made baseball history repeat itself by matching the miracle man George Stallings, who pulled the Boston Braves from the cellar to the sun in 1914. And Charlie Grimm can sometimes be a bit grim. They tell how one rookie pitcher was distracted by female admirers in the grandstand until the manager bawled out, "Perhaps you'll pitch to the plate if we dress the batters in kimonos." Sport means spending, and that means business. Joseph P. Kennedy, who was chairman of the Securities Exchange Commission, told me just before he sailed for Europe the other day that restored public confidence in industrial securities meant first better, then bigger business. Six leaders of the motor car industry I've talked with since coming here point to big increase in production and employment. Rail shipments of finished cars for the fourth quarter of this year will exceed the same period a year ago by 200%. But it isn't just figures. It's the feeling of everybody everywhere that business is coming back. That the best way to help business along is to leave it alone. That a new wave of prosperity can be made a permanent wave if prosperity is governed by prudence. Anyhow, the national verdict is in. That it's time to change from the morning band to the bandwagon.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. We'll be waiting to pick up your news feature on our next broadcast. The Magic Key carries us back to Radio City to meet a man whose tireless effort over the last 50 years has earned him the reputation of being music's greatest friend. We are all indebted to this man who has been this country's leader in promoting a greater appreciation of good music. It is a privilege to present Dr. Walter Damrosch, Dean of American Conductors.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. When RCA's Magic Key started bringing millions at a time to a concert through development in radio, some of my most distinguished colleagues thought that the symphony orchestras of America would in consequence dwindle down to one or two major organizations. Instead of that, there are today more symphony orchestras in America than ever before. Also, there is an ever-increasing demand for the higher type of musical entertainment. It's rather inspiring to contemplate the progress. My father and I led symphonies all our lives, and all the audiences of our whole lifetime added together would probably not equal one-tenth of the listeners that, thanks to the radio, will now hear us play for you Wagner's Entrance of the Gods into Valhalla, including the Lament of the Rhine Maidens, from Das Rheingold.
Thank you, Dr. Damrosch. Your friends will be delighted to learn that your music appreciation hour will start again next Friday. RCA deeply appreciates your contribution to American understanding of fine music. Friends, there will be many fine symphony orchestras on the air this season, and we think you'll be interested in knowing that the new 1936 RCA Magic Brain radio set, with its magic eye and new RCA metal tubes, brings you all the rich coloring and shading of this fine music. We can't begin to tell you about the magic eye because it would take too long to explain it thoroughly. However, may we suggest that the RCA Victor dealer in your neighborhood would be only too glad to give you a demonstration. And that's really the only way you can fully appreciate its quality. Out in Hollywood, all the characters you've seen in the silly symphonies and Mickey Mouse pictures are having the time of their young lives reading the newest issue of the Mickey Mouse magazine. Donald Duck is going wild over page 4. He says it's simply marvelous. The fact that it's a picture of himself may have something to do with that opinion. Professor Goof, the mad scientist, is holding his copy upside down. Naturally, he's standing on his head so he can read it. Giddy Goat has just finished the contents of the magazine. He claims he never ate anything more delicious. Mickey's little nephew, Mortimer Mouse, says he enjoyed every word of the stories and will enjoy them a lot more when he learns how to read. RCA Photophone has brought them to you on the screen. The magic key is turning fast. Now it's turning to California and Hollywood to bring you Walt Disney's immortal animated characters. Ladies and gentlemen, Walt Disney.
Where'd you say we was, Mickey?
Quiet, Goofy. We're on the air.
Donald!
The bit of operatic rehearsal, which unfortunately slipped into our program, warns you that a musical masterpiece is about to be unveiled. Before introducing Walt Disney and the Mickey Mouse Grand Opera Company, I think that we should hear from a young fellow whose 7th birthday the whole world is celebrating this week. Mickey Mouse.
Hello.
Well, Mickey, old boy, this seems like a swell chance to thank your many friends for all those birthday presents.
Yeah, well.
Well, go on, go on.
Thanks a whole lot, everybody.
And here's the young man behind the laughs, behind the fantasy and homely truths which have made Walt Disney Pictures world-honored and beloved. Walt Disney.
Hello, everybody. For the benefit of nations who don't understand barnyard English, we send our greetings in a universal language, music. The Rigoletto Quartet, just as you will hear it sung in our new picture called Mickey's Grand Opera. Permit me to introduce the singing stars of this operatic triumph. First, that great romantic tenor and what a lover, Don Juan Donald Duck. Donald, this is no place to sell magazines.
What?
No. Our little duck is trying to work his way through kindergarten to sell Mickey's new children's magazine. Donald, cut it out. Listen, Donald. If our friends want a Mickey Mouse magazine, they'll buy it at the newsstand. Not from you. Will I buy one? No, Donald. I get all I want for nothing. Try Goofy. Maybe he'll buy one. Hey, Goofy.
Oh, me? You mean me?
Can you read, Goofy?
Gosh, I don't know. I never tried.
Too bad, Donald. No sale. Well, to continue with our introductions of Mickey's Grand Opera star. Presenting that famous canine basso, Pluto the Pup. Attaboy. And now, that soprano supreme, Madame Clara Cluck.
Hi there, Mouse.
The old hen's molding. She's got the roof.
Uh-oh. Better give her throat another shot of the grease gun, Goofy. Quick.
Stick out your neck, Clara.
Hey, spray the inside, not the outside.
Whoa, the inside. Come on, Clara. They are. Now gargle it. Swallow. Atta girl. Now let's hear your high C.
Perfect. On with the show. The Rigoletto Quartet. Just as it will be sung by the Barnyard Operatic Trio in Mickey's Grand Opera. Okay, Maestro Mickey, take it away.
Soon again on the screen. The magic key of radio is turning. We take you now to San Francisco.
500 years ago, Magellan sailed around the world in 3 years. Less than 50 years ago, a man made the headlines of the world's newspapers by making the trip around the globe in 100 days. You all remember when, a year ago, the record of 8 days was established in an airplane. But now the magic key takes you around the world in less than 2 minutes. With stops at Honolulu, Manila, Tokyo, Geneva, and back to New York. Ready, Hawaii? Here we come.
Hello, America. This is Honolulu. It's 9:30 Sunday morning, and no ukuleles. We're just getting ready for church. We'd like you to stop longer next time you come our way. Aloha from Honolulu.
And now, out over the wide stretches of the world's largest ocean, and to Manila.
Good morning, Mr. President, over here. I want to say hello to the United States while you are on your way to Tokyo.
Thanks, Manila, for the glimpse of tomorrow. Now, on to Tokyo.
Captain JVM calling KWE and KES. This is JVM and JVF calling KWE and KES. Bolinas, California. Hello, Bolinas. Hello, Bolinas. This is Tokyo.
And now, out across the great Chinese Empire and over the plains of Asia and into Europe and the north center of the world, we find Geneva, Switzerland.
Welcome to Geneva, period. We wish you could stay, but it is 9 o'clock. Sunday night here, and our best time. Good.
Yes, you're right. We're back in New York in Radio City. Thank you, RCA Communications, for the daylight to dark to daylight trip around the world, all in 2 minutes. I am sure that our friends will want to know that this feat was made possible by RCA engineers, the same engineers that developed the famous Magic Brain, Magic Eye, Metal Tube Radio. Paul Whiteman, our own king of jazz, is back again. Paul, will you introduce your next selection?
We'd like to play one more number from the new picture, Thanks a Million.
The title? I'm Sitting High on a Hilltop. And one of the boys in the band, Johnny Hauser, will sing the refrain.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Paul Whiteman. Night after night and year after year, this theme has made you draw your chair a little closer to the radio because it meant that America's most beloved characters were about to come to you. The magic key turns now to Amos and Andy. Here they are.
How you do, ladies and gentlemen?
How you do, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, Mr. Sarnoff is on his way to New York, and he listened to us out in the middle of the ocean. Mr. Sarnoff, you find a lot of changes here in New York when you get back. It seems that Mr. Ellsworth has been reading about the different city officials in the various cities throughout the United States. He's been letting the kids come into the city hall and run the city for one day. So Mr. Ellsworth let the page boys here run NBC for one day, and the vice presidents all acted as page boys. And Mr. Ellsworth wanted us to tell you that if you could let him do that for 2 weeks on a stretch, why, he thinks he could get NBC back on their feet again.
Yeah, Mr. Sarnoff, RCA has done wonders with the new radio set. First they had the magic brain, now they got the magic key, the magic eye. They has got Thurston, the magician, at the factory now working.
Oh, yeah, you can pull a rabbit out of radio set you make now any time.
Yeah.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, we've been in radio for many years, and when we listen to a program like this today, we is Well, it's really hard to believe that such things are possible.
Well, I know something that I don't think has ever been told about you started when you started in radio. Tell them about that.
Well, I started in radio during the war. I was a wireless operator in the Navy.
Yeah, and a seasick sailor.
Yeah, but getting back to the serious side, ladies and gentlemen, as close as we are to radio and as long as we have been in it, there's something about it that almost frightens us. When you stop and think that we can speak here in front of this ribbon microphone and our voices could be heard all around the world.
Yeah, when we started in radio, it was down in New Orleans. We was in New Orleans putting on an amateur show. That was in 1920, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, they didn't have microphones like this. They used to broadcast in a megaphone, about 2 feet in diameter.
Yeah, that's a big word there. You're getting out of character on me.
I never will forget, too, right after we finished singing, a lady called up about 3-4 blocks away, and she said that she heard us. And we said, no fooling.
Yeah, neither one of us believed us.
Then we started on radio a couple of years after that, just for the fun of it. We used to sing songs together. We didn't have much harmony.
Yeah, without harmony and without pay. We was called the Without Boys.
Then we decided in 1925 to make radio our work, and instead of doing radio as a sideline, why, we gave radio all of our time and done nothing else.
Yeah, I never will forget the night that we started to do that blackface on the air. Remember that night? Took us from 12 o'clock midnight till 7 o'clock in the morning to write the first episode.
Yeah.
We sure did get on this record, didn't we?
I don't think the sponsors of this program would object to us sending a message to the listeners on the air.
So what you going to say?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have been in radio for many years. We have been with NBC for the Pepsi and Company going on 7 years. We are both very grateful for many things. To you listeners who have tolerated us all these years, we are very grateful. We have been fortunate enough to have our help. If taking our work seriously has helped us, why, we can truthfully say that we have done that. The reason we don't permit an audience in the studio during our broadcast is because we feel a certain responsibility when we sit down in front of a microphone for our nightly episode. Our responsibility is to you who may be listening on your radio set. And we feel that we want to devote our entire time, attention, and thought to the listeners who are sitting in front of a receiving set in some far-off place.
Yeah, our time is up.
Yeah, that's right, it is. You know, we live by the watch, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we eat and sleep by the watch. Keeps us hopping all the time.
Yeah.
But we is glad to be able to do it.
I wish we had more time to talk to you. We've enjoyed it. We want to thank RCA for including us on this fine program, and we hope that they'll let us talk to you again some Sunday afternoon. So good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon, folks.
Thank you, Amos, and thank you, Andy. And thanks, National Broadcasting Company, for the nationwide network that brings these two lovable citizens into millions of American homes. Magic Key of Radio Corporation of America turns, drawing to a close the first of a new series of weekly broadcasts in which the facilities of the RCA family have been used. These facilities, devised and perfected in the experimental and engineering laboratories of RCA, have aided in bringing about a new conception of living that is daily drawing the world into a closer feeling of intimacy and understanding. May we extend to you, our listeners, a cordial invitation to avail yourselves of the many services and products offered by the RCA family. If you need a better radio or phonograph, your nearest RCA Victor dealer will gladly show you the newly announced 1936 Magic Brain models with a new Magic Eye and the new RCA metal tube. When you want to send a telegram, the quick and accurate services of the RCA communications system brings the whole world within a few minutes of your home or office. And Radio Marine carries your message from ship to ship and shore to ship. For entertainment that is consistently fine, RCA offers the nationwide service of the National Broadcasting Company.
RCA has given up this time next week to make way for the broadcast of the World Series. 2 weeks from today, the magic key of RCA returns at this same time with another program of stars headed by Rudy Valley and his Connecticut Yankees, the famous soprano Giuseppina Giannini, singing from Berlin, John B. Kennedy, Frank Black and his NBC Symphony Orchestra, and others. Paul Whiteman and his orchestra appeared on this program through the courtesy of Kraft Phoenix Cheese Corporation, Amos and Andy through the courtesy of the Pepsodent Company. Milton J. Cross speaking.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.